Morning. This is the Camtasia recording for Thursday's lecture in EE452 Wireless and Mobile Networks. For those of you who were not able to attend on Thursday, the background is that there was technical difficulties with the equipment in the room, and the lecture did not take place in a live fashion. I've been told that those difficulties were sorted out on Friday, so hopefully next week everything will go sort of as per normal. In lieu of the lecture occurring live, I'm making a Camtasia recording of it now. So apologies to those of you who showed up on Thursday. Now, the subject for today is a digital communication system model for radio systems. And here we're looking at sort of the basic steps that need to be taken to transmit data over a radio link. And what we'll see is that most of the steps are pretty much the same as you would need to transmit data over any link. And we'll not be going into sort of more network aspects of this transmission, just sort of thinking of it as a point-to-point link. Okay, excuse me. So the main reference for this material is Chapter 6 of Stallings, and again, it's quite readable. Although he does not, again, present this sort of in quite such an explicit fashion, but he goes through all the major components of this model. Again, what we talk about today is pretty much basic digital comms theory. So any digital comms textbook or any wireless comms textbook would give you pretty much the same story. So what is our model? And so the first thing to consider is that we, again, are looking at a radio channel, and we won't be explicitly discussing the characteristics of this channel today, but rather we'll discuss the other components of the system today. Starting at the other end of the model, we have our message source, and this source can be either analog, and for us, analog would be voice signals. And in the case of voice, obviously you're going to have to digitize that signal before going on any further. It's also possible that we have other digital sources. Now, once you have a digitized signal, there's a series of steps that are gone through, and again, this would be true of any data communication system, although what we're considering again will be things that are sort of suitable for radio links. And so the first step that this digital collection of bits the first way in which this digital collection of bits will be processed is through source encoding. And the idea of source encoding is to minimize the number of bits, the amount of bits that need to be sent to transmit the message. So in some way, compress your data. And this could be a course in and of itself. This is, you know, one of the big ideas behind information theory. What we'll look at primarily here is how this works for voice signals. Okay, once you have your data in some sort of efficient format, then the next step that of processing that it will go through is channel encoding. And as in source encoding, we reduce the number of bits. In channel encoding, we actually increase the number of bits. We're adding redundancy in order to deal with errors that are introduced as we transmit the data over a channel. So we know that not every bit will be received at the far end and interpreted in the correct fashion. So the purpose of channel encoding is to deal with those bits which are not received in the correct fashion. So we want to either detect them or possibly correct them. So we now have the bits that we wish to transmit, that we wish to send to the far end. And the next step is modulation. And the idea behind modulation is that the actual form of transmission is going to be a sinusoidal wave. And we have to convert our bits into some sort of sinusoidal representation. And we'll see that there's a number of choices for that. The bits are then transmitted, and again, in comms theory, that channel could be anything. In our case, we are dealing primarily, well, solely with a radio channel. And once it's received, we must reverse all the steps at the far end. So we demodulate the system, so we translate our sinusoidal signal back into bits. We examine those bits for errors and potentially correct the errors in channel decoding. Then we use the source decoder to recover our original message. And in the case of an analog message, we must, again, convert our digital representation back into an analog signal. So, to recap, the purpose of any digital communication system is to effectively convey information from a sender to a receiver at a distance. Okay, and in our case, the physical transmission medium is the radio link. The information in our message can originally be either analog or digital, and so for analog, we're specifically thinking of voice. And digital would be all other forms of communication. Arguably, you could things like video would initially be potentially be analog, for instance, if you're having a real-time video conversation. But we're not going to go into how video would be encoded. We're going to stick with voice. And so everything else we're going to assume has already been digitized. So, again, we go through the steps to transform this initial message into something that can be transmitted over our radio link. So what we're going to do in this lecture is say a few words about each of these steps and also look at the performance characteristics that we have for these sorts of. So what we'll see is that, again, there's some basic theoretical limits to how much data can be transmitted, and we'll restate Shannon's channel capacity theorem, which gives you, again, an upper limit on how much data you can transmit. And we'll also look at error rates. So the idea here is that both capacity and error are linked to the strength of a signal and to the noise present in a channel. And so, and various forms of coding can either improve or disimprove the performance you get for a certain signal strength and a certain noise ratio. So we'll have a look at that. And then, again, we'll look at various aspects of the different steps, both generally and keeping in mind that we are transmitting over a wireless link. So, again, the reason that we have any issues at all is the noise which is present in a channel. And this noise limits our capacity to interpret bits correctly. And it adds a requirement that we sort of transmit our signals at a power level that is enough to overcome the noise aspects of the system. Okay, and noise can come from a number of sources. The primary one that we'll consider is thermal noise or white noise. And this is uniformly distributed across the system. And I should say it's uniformly distributed across the spectrum, the frequency spectrum. And we will characterize that noise according, we'll sort of normalize it so to the amount found in 1 kilohertz of bandwidth. And so this is given by N0 is K times T, where K is Boltzmann's constant, and T is the temperature in Kelvin. Okay, and so the amount of noise present is going to be dependent on the temperature to some extent, but also on the bandwidth of the system. So you're going to have to do, the total noise in the system will be N0 times whatever bandwidth you have in the system. Now, when we look at the radio link, we'll see that noise can potentially be sort of much more complicated than that, but for today we'll go with that definition of noise. Other sources of noise are intermodulation noise. So if you have a radio link, you can potentially have a number of transmissions at the same time, and possibly these transmissions are overlapping in frequency, at least to some extent. Or even if they don't, then there's still some, they can still combine to cause interference at different frequencies. Typically, they'll interfere at either the sum or difference of the original frequencies. Third, we have crosstalk, and this is, again, an unwanted coupling of signals on separate channels. So here we would the classic example of this, which is not relevant to our module, is a twisted pair of wires. So you would have transmissions on both pairs, and they could interfere with each other. Here, this would arise if you had sort of a very tightly focused signal, so very, very, very focused antennas. But even with these focused antennas, there might be some spillover if you have two sort of pointed more or less in the same direction. And finally, you may also have impulse noise, and so this is unpredictable or irregular interference arising for sort of unspecified reasons. Okay, so you might have a lightning bolt or whatever as you're transmitting your signal. And typically, there's not much you can do about that. So, what do we want to do about noise? Well, we'll consider its effect on system performance. And the first basic result, and again, for those of you who are undergraduates, you will undoubtedly see this in the datacoms module. For those of you who are master's students, well, if you've taken a datacoms module, you will certainly have encountered the Shannon capacity theorem. And the idea of this theorem, again, is that the maximum bit rate of a channel, called the channel capacity, depends on the bandwidth of the channel and the signal-to-noise ratio. So the signal-to-noise ratio is the ratio of the average signal power to the average noise power. And, you know, logically, you can think that the higher your signal is relative to noise, then the better your ability to interpret your bits correctly. So Shannon capacity says that your bit rate B, or sorry, your channel capacity C, is dependent on your channel bandwidth, and then the log of 1 plus the signal to noise ratio. Okay, so again, you can see that as the signal-to-noise ratio increases, your channel capacity increases. Okay, so this is a theoretical limit and rarely achieved in practice, but it does, again, give us some feel for our system. And it's based on an assumption of, again, our white noise, or our sort of uniformly distributed noise. Now, one thing we can note is that we can consider other forms of processing. So this is just about the channel, but we can consider the other blocks in our system, and to some extent we can regard them as in some way either adding or decreasing the noise in the system. So while the initial theory deals with just channel noise, we will also look at other aspects of the system as introducing noise into the system that can be sort of factored in here. So just as a note, something to, again, recall from the dim and distant past. Frequently, the signal-to-noise ratio is going to be expressed in decibels, and so a decibel is just a log scale representation of a factor. And so the signal-to-noise ratio in decibels is 10 log base 10 of the signal-to-noise ratio, not in decibels. The SNR used in Shannon capacity theorem is not in decibels, so if you're given a term in decibels, then you have to convert it back out to non-decibels. Now, the next factor that we're going to introduce is the bit energy to noise ratio, and this is related to the signal to noise ratio, but it's normalized to consider the fact that what we're transmitting is a bit. So instead of looking at signal power, we look at the energy that's taken to transmit a single bit. And then we relate this to the, again, power density per hertz, our N0 factor that we discussed earlier. Obviously, there is a relationship between the signal-to-noise ratio and the bit energy to noise density ratio. And so in particular, obviously the noise is N0 times whatever bandwidth you need to transmit your signal. And the signal energy per bit is your overall signal power divided by the data rate. And so we can plug all those factors in, and we get that EB over N0 is our signal-to-noise ratio times BT over R. And apologies, I thought I'd normalized my notation, but S over N is, again, the SNR. And so this introduces this factor, the ratio of the signal bandwidth to the bit rate, and R over BT is considered to be the bandwidth efficiency, and so you can think that obviously the higher the bit rate you can achieve within the same bandwidth, so the more efficient your system is in, to some interpretation. And we'll see that the achievable bandwidth efficiency is going to be dependent on the modulation schemes that we use. So finally, we can tie together our two notions, our bit energy to noise ratio and our capacity theorem, and we do this through what's called spectral efficiency. And the spectral efficiency of a channel is the ratio of channel capacity to channel bandwidth. So again, this is similar to the idea of what bit rate you can get for what bandwidth. And so we can start with Shannon's capacity theorem, and we relate our signal-to-noise ratio to our spectral efficiency. So our spectral efficiency is this term C over B. And then, again, we can massage that to replace the signal-to-noise ratio with the bit energy to noise density ratio, and we end up with the following term: EB over N0 is B over C, or 1 over the spectral efficiency times 2 to the spectral efficiency minus 1. Okay, and that can be used to determine what bit energy to noise density ratio you need to achieve a certain spectral efficiency. So we will return to this idea of bit energy to noise ratio later in the lecture, and we will see how it interacts with various modulation schemes to also give us the bit error rate, or the amount of time, the percentage of time that bits are received or interpreted incorrectly by the receiver. For now, however, we're going to move on to look at our message encoding, and again, we are primarily going to be looking at how voice is handled. Voice data is still the largest form of traffic in in wireless systems, well, in cellular systems anyway. So we'll have a look at how voice is handled for these systems. And so the first step is just going to be taking our analog voice signal and digitizing it. So that's the A to D conversion. And then we will have a look at source encoding. And the idea here is to come up with sort of a more compressed or lower bitrate signal, digital stream representing our original voice source. So the idea behind the digitization of a voice signal relies on the Nyquist sampling theorem, and this sampling theorem states that any analog signal may be fully recovered if it is sampled at a rate of twice the signal bandwidth. And again, this is sort of a basic data communications result. Okay. Typically, we consider the bandwidth for voice to be 4,000 Hz. We may lose something, but that gets most of it. And therefore, to sample voice, we would need 8,000 samples per second. Now, this is still not a bit representation, but rather, sort of again, it's a sequence of numbers, but these numbers are drawn from sort of the real line, so they must further be encoded using bits, and we use typically 8 bits per sample. Okay, now this leads to a 64 kilobit per second voice representation, and this is your classic telephony bitrate. This is the rate at which digital voice data has been transmitted for a long time. So, this form of sampling and digitization is referred to as pulse code modulation. So the pulse refers to the sample and the code refers to the digitization of that sample. Now, again, this digitization adds a form of error or noise into the system called a quantization noise. And the idea here is, if you look at this chart, if you've digitized, then essentially you have signals along any one of your available representation is along any one of those lines. Obviously, the actual signal may not fall exactly onto one of those lines, so you have to sort of move it to the closest of those. So you're not getting an exact representation of the signal. There's some small factor of error inserted. And so this adds a signal-to-noise ratio that is dependent on the number of bits used for quantization plus a certain factor. Okay. Note also that you will lose any frequencies over 4 kilohertz, so you aren't going to be exactly recreating your signal, but you're not too far off either. Okay, so again, this just gives us an example. We use 4 bits because 8 bits would be a lot of levels and wouldn't fit too well in a graph. And so again, we see we have an actual sampled value, and then we have the quantized version of that value, and that quantized number is then represented as a sequence of bits. Now, what we showed there was dividing up our voice range into a number of equal steps. It is also possible that the encoding may be nonlinear to reduce error for low amplitude signals, so to be able to catch more of the low amplitude signals. And so you can see here what the issue is. If you have a strong signal, you would be able to use the entire range, the entire representation. If you had a weak signal, you would not. So in practice, a technique called companding, compression and expanding of the signal is used. So if you have a weak signal, you spread it out over that entire quantization level so that, again, you get enough detail in your representation. But the basic idea remains the same. You have sampled your signal. You might be clever about it to try and sort of reduce the amount of quantization error, but you've sampled your signal. If we assume that our samples are quite close, then we should be able to completely recreate our initial signal with a small bit of noise added in. And the cost we have for that is having to transmit at 64 kilobits per second. Now, the next step in the processing is what's called source encoding, and the idea here is to try to reduce that required bit rate, so to reduce the number of bits that we have to transmit. And it should be noted that this applies to any form of data, so you can encode purely digital data, you can compress purely digital data, or again, we can compress our voice data. And typically, there would be a number of ways of doing this compression, and again, there's theory about how you would just take any random series of bits and compress them, but typically what happens is that the original source of the data and the characteristics of that data are used in order to compress efficiently. So this compression can either be lossy or loss-free, and again, if you're just considering any data source, you would want to perform some sort of loss-free compression. If you're considering voice or to some extent video, then again, because of the analog nature of the initial signals and how we as sort of the ultimate end recipients interpret those signals, the compression can actually be lossy. So you can maintain the meaning of the signal without recreating it exactly. And typically what happens with voice or video is that the compression relies on the similarity between one sample and the next sample. Okay. And so, again, you could spend a whole module talking about how you would compress video. You could spend a good bit of time talking about how you compress voice. We're just going to look at some basic techniques so that you can get the idea of what we are talking about. Now, again, we're going to concentrate on speech encoding, and there are a number of techniques used. And again, our baseline is the pulse code modulation, and our first set of techniques are based on this initial sampling technique and trying to find ways of more efficiently representing that sample. And again, typically what happens is that instead of transmitting the actual sample values, you start transmitting the difference between from one sample to the next. And we depend on that difference not being sort of covering the whole range. And so we can get away with a few less bits by doing that. And so you can drop your bit rate by up to with some loss of quality, but not a lot. Okay. Now, in our original cellular systems, and again, this holds true even today, although not to the same extent it used to, bandwidth was at a real premium, and so different encoding techniques were considered which would sort of reduce the required bitrate even further. These techniques went away from trying to convey the actual sampled signal and instead came up with sort of mathematical representations of the voice signal, and these representations were parameterized. And then instead of sending samples, you sent the parameters. And you can get down to quite low bit rates doing this, but there would be quite a drop in quality to do this. And we'll say a few words about LPC and then code-excited linear prediction, which again is typically used in mobile systems. Okay, so our first technique, differential pulse code modulation, as the name says, instead of transmitting the signal, is going to transmit the sample is going to transmit the difference between consecutive samples. Okay, and the assumption is that the difference between consecutive samples is going to be small, and therefore we don't need the full 8 bits to encode that difference. Okay, and so typically we use maybe 6 bits instead of 8 bits. Now, that is a lossy compression. You're not going to fully record the differences, but it's still pretty good. Adaptive differential pulse code modulation predicts the next sample not just as a difference, but based on a combination of the previous N samples. And so we still send the difference between samples, but the quantization levels now are not fixed as they were for the straight differential pulse code modulation, but rather, again, they're based on what we know of what's gone on previously. So the actual quantization levels vary, but then they're encoded into less bits now. You might have a four bit encoding of the difference, and then the exact interpretation of that difference is going to be based on our observations of previous samples. And so again, this is lossy, but gives you a pretty good recreation of the signal. Another permutation on differential pulse code modulation is what's called delta modulation. And here we only have two quantization levels. You either go up or you go down. And we can see that that's going to introduce a larger quantization errors. But we can roughly track the shape of our initial signal. And so we see here that if we have a sharp change in signal amplitude, it takes a while for the coded signal to catch up with that in either direction. Okay. And so you can improve your accuracy in this case by increasing the sampling rate, because again, if you increase the rate, then the change in signals will actually decrease. But again, that's going to increase the transmission rate as well. In general, you can achieve data rates of about 16 kilobits per second, while having some quality of transmission. Basically, it's going to sound bad, but you can understand it. And so this is used primarily by the military, where, you know, they're not worried about quality, they just want to get their signal through. So, again, all of these techniques are attempting to directly code the sampled signal. Okay, so what you are getting out at the other end is a sequence of samples, which you will then, again, reconstitute into your analog signal. And again, what we've seen is that we can fairly easily get down about half our required bit rate. If you try to drop it down to a quarter, you're really cutting into the quality of the signal. So, as an alternative approach, we can use a parameterized model of the voice source and at sort of periodically send parameters for that model instead of sort of, again, direct samples. And at the receiver, then the parameters are used to synthesize the voice from the model with the parameters put in. So the basic model for this is what's called linear predictive coding. And we'll see again that various parameters of the voice have been, or various components of a voice signal have been modeled: loudness, pitch, a vocal tract model, the synthesis of the vocal cord, sort of noise if there's no signal at the time. And that is all combined. This is, each of these components would be parameterized, and then that's all combined to form your signal. And so the good news is that we can get down to quite a low bit rate, 4.8 kilobits per second, and that's down from our 64 kilobit per second, sort of ideal. The bad news is that it gives you quite a synthetic sound. Okay, so typically voice codecs are based on this, but they don't use this. They add sort of additional information to try to overcome the synthetic sound that you get with the basic LPC system. Okay, and so again, at the decoder, the parameters are entered and used to reconstruct the signal. And again, the output of this does sound quite synthetic. The code-excited linear prediction uses this basic LPC model, but then tries to add back in additional information that will make the output sound a bit less synthetic. And this additional representation comes in terms of a code book with typical residual values, so typical values of what might have been lost out of the signal by our reconstruction. And in addition to sending the parameters for the LPC. We send information as to which value within the codebook will come closest to recreating our initial signal, and we send that value in addition to, again, our usual parameters. And at the source, we again pick out which of these values we need, and we combine that with our LPC signal in order to transmit in order to reconstruct our voice signal. And this can be done at a rate of about 8 kilobits per second. So again, a better rate than we would get for any of our pulse code modulation and differential pulse code modulation variants. And again, the signal that's recreated is not exact, but it is quite acceptable to the human ear. So that's what I'm going to say about source coding and specifically about voice coding. And our next topic will be to move on to channel encoding. And so what we've seen here with source coding is that we have compressed our signal, so we are able to sort of send less bits, have a lower bandwidth requirement. And again, over radio channels, this is quite important because bandwidth is at a premium. We have, in order to do that, we've introduced essentially noise, either loss or noise, into the system. So we're unable to sort of we're unable to completely reconstruct our signal as it was initially. Now, again, for voice signals, this tends not to be an issue. We must also consider that our signals may be coming from something other than voice. We have, you know, any sort of data transfer should be considered over this system. And our next component, channel encoding, is designed to deal with the loss that is introduced in a radio channel. So it is it's certain that not every bit in the channel will be received and interpreted correctly. There will be some rate at which the bits are received in error. And so, as you would have seen in any sort of basic networks course, we need to add some redundancy to deal with that error. And we'll have a break here and return to that in the next segment of the lecture.